Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse talk show. We are talking about the rioters that were seen recently in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse talk show. We are here talking about the rioters that were recently seen in the Islamic Republic of Iran. In order to talk about these rioters, we have decided to invite Sheikh Ali Qumi from the Islamic Republic of Pakistan to speak to us just a little bit about this so that we can really understand what was happening in this limited time frame now that these rioters, most of them have been apprehended and they are under control. Let's go ahead and invite our guest, inshallah. Sheikh Ali Qumi, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the Islamic Pulse Talk Show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for having me.
So jazakallah, thank you so much. Allah bless you for taking time out of your schedule, coming back to Islamic Pulse. In order to talk a little bit about these recent events that occurred in the Islamic Republic of Iran over the last few weeks or so, in the previous episode, if the viewers haven't seen it, it was about Mahsa Amini. They should definitely watch that episode as well. In this episode, we wanted to move the discussion forwards a little bit, right? So along with Mahsa Amini, which we talked about in the previous episode, in this episode, we really felt, right, everybody who lived in the Islamic Republic, that there was this huge emphasis put on the rioters, you know? And what was really interesting is that the mainstream media didn't really define who these rioters were. It was always just, you know, either rioters or, I don't know, disenfranchised youth. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they were called peaceful, peaceful people coming out for human rights. So pretty much there was so much misguidance on who these individuals were. So we decided and we thought that it was a good idea to really understand who these rioters were in order to clear the air a little bit. So in the name of Allah, we hand it to you. Give us a little bit of a background on who these rioters were in the recent riots in the Islamic Republic of Iran.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani la'ini rajim, bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Well, once again, thanks for the opportunity for me to be able to shed some light on these recent events. If you look at what happened in the Islamic Republic of Iran, for those who are old enough and who keep themselves posted, this is not something that was unprecedented. This is not something that was new, and this is not something that, you know, they have not seen and experienced it before. What was different this time around was the media trial and the media emphasis on the whole issue, which we will talk about at some other time. But Iranians, you know, generally speaking, the Islamic Republic, the Islamic system, you know, the officials, you know, all of them are kind of pretty used to seeing these small little disturbances. Mm-hmm. And when I say small little disturbances, for those who are sitting outside, they're going to be like, what? You know, was it small little? Well, yes, in fact, it was small little disturbance, which was actually blown out of proportion by the mainstream media and by the social media, and different tactics were used to exploit the situation of this sad occasion, you know, sad death of this lady, which Mahsa Amini, which became the trigger point, right? Now, who these rioters were, you know, again...
I have to apologize. I do have a tendency to kind of jump in, you know, because if the discussion continues, it's kind of difficult to come back. It was blown out of proportion to such an extent where, for example, I had relatives who contacted me and they were crying. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they thought that this country has turned into a war zone, the system is breaking down, you know, the Berlin Wall is collapsing and everything is in chaos. And for example, there's no groceries in the grocery store. And I don't know, people, you know, literally they were crying. And not just one, a few of my relatives, they said, please don't leave the house. Keep the kids at home. Don't let, you know, your wife outside of the house, right? And I used to tell them, I said, listen, people are going to the park. People are going to the grocery store. Life is completely normal. Mm-hmm. And in the over 1.5 months where this whole issue happened, I have yet to see one individual come out and do any kind of civil disobedience this country.
Right. Yeah, you go to madrasa every day, right? You go to your workplace, whatever, visit your teachers, you know, visit your friends. Mm-hmm. Nothing is seen, right? Especially in Qom. In maybe other parts of mm-hmm. Iran, you know, there are pockets, you know, where things are happening. Sure. And those are real, and we will address those. But, you know, generally speaking, if you say that the country is on fire, the system is going to collapse, none of that is happening,
and
right?
And that's what was being portrayed.
Life is normal, right. You know? And this is something that is on the wish list of the Zionists and the imperialists.
Joe Biden, right? Joseph Biden, he said that, you know, we're going to free Iran.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And how exactly are you going to do it? Well, by pumping a lot of money into Iran and give it to, you know, some rotten apples, as they call it. And also, you know, by through their insurgents and their intelligence agencies, aka, CIA, right? Their operatives and
so-called
then
intelligence agencies.
So-called intelligence. You know,
you need
they're really
to be part of an intelligence.
They're really spying agencies, right? Mm-hmm. And then you know they're trained mercenaries, right? Sure. You know, through them, and of course, you know, let's not forget media. Through the media. Pressure that they are trying to build. You know, they thought they would be able to destabilize the country and eventually take the regime down, right? The Islamic government and the Islamic system will collapse, you know, it will go. So this is a wish list, and this is not a recent, where I started my point, it's not a recent thing, this is not a new thing, right? They've been trying it for over 40 years. When the Islamic Revolution took place, they said that, you know, it's not going to last for more than a week.
Sure.
The American officials. And then after a week, they said that it's not going to last for more than a month.
Right.
Because these guys don't know how to run a country. They're not going to be, they're just, you know, these. After a month, they're like, you know, a year. And after a year, it's like, you know, 2000 this, 2000. It just didn't happen, right? Oh, after the war, first it was like, you know, we're going to start the war. The war is going to take them away. You know, the Iran-Iraq
war,
right? Eight years war, which was imposed by the West, right? Over 50 countries were helping Saddam Hussein, right, to launch an assault on Iran. And they were like, you know, this is a done deal. You know, Tehran was bombed. You know, Qom was bombed. Different places were bombed. Well, guess what? The Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Republic, the Islamic system at that time was like a sapling. Mm-hmm. And this is what the leader has said himself, sure. Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he said it was like a sapling back in the day. Mm-hmm. You couldn't uproot this sapling. Today, Iran has become stronger, mightier, it's more confident, it has more resources, it has more stability, it has educated people, it has more believers now who are ready to sacrifice for this country, right? So forget about it. It's like a grown oak tree, right? It's like a deep-rooted tree now. So this is not happening, right? Regime change, collapse of the, this is not happening. So what are they trying? They're just being desperate. The Americans are being desperate, and the Zionists are being desperate, right? Because they see Iran as an existential threat to them, their, you know, existence. You know, the illegal Zionist regime has to go, right? All the justice seekers of the world are waiting for that moment when that Zionist regime actually collapses, right? Again, you know, some people, you know, they, because of the propaganda of the mainstream, they're like, is anti-what when you talk about this?
The anti-Semitism?
Anti-Semitism, thank you, right? No, this is not anti-Semitism. The Jewish people, they have all the right to live anywhere in the world, just like any other human being has a right to live anywhere in the world. But the Zionist regime of Israel, it is not a Jewish government. It is a political ideology based on Zionism, right? Supported by the evil powers of the world, the Tawaghit of the world. So it has to go, right?
And
even the Jewish people.
I mean,
it's a stolen land, it's occupation, right?
It's occupation. But let's go before we, because it seems like you really want to talk about Palestine. Everybody wants to talk about Palestine.
Of course we do.
But I really want to come back to the these rioters in the Islamic Republic of Iran, because that's what you had started in.
Right.
And I had interrupted you, actually. Right.
So, you know, things are normal here. That's one thing for our viewers to know.
Okay,
you know, those who are outside of Iran, you know, they're thinking that Iran is on fire. No, mainstream media is just fooling you, right? They have thrown a lot of money, a lot of cash on this, and they're trying to just, you know, portray a picture that Iran is destabilized. That's all they want, you know, through
and
these news reports.
Destabilized, and also to show that there's supposedly a majority of the population that does not
that
want
too.
This
Thank
system.
You. Yeah,
right?
These protesters. Every time they come out, they're like, you know, a few dozen people.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you look at the pro-system rallies in Iran, you know, this is something that I don't know how to get it across to the world. You know, I hope one day we can find out a good way. Mm-hmm. I was just looking at the November 4th, which is the Mubarzeba Istakbar-e-Jahani rally.
So it's called the Day of Opposing the Arrogant
Powers. Arrogant Powers or something
and
like that, right?
And it's also the day where these university students who were loyal to Imam Khomeini and the ideology of Imam Khomeini went and they took over the American
Den of Espionage.
The American embassy, known as the Den of Espionage, right? And you said this rally. I wanted to put that into context.
Awesome.
Go ahead.
Right.
What did
Thank you
see
you.
In that rally?
It's like countless. It's like a flood of people.
Flood,
and we have. I wish you could show these videos.
Yeah.
And I have those video clips. Over 900 cities throughout Iran.
900 cities.
Over 900 cities. There were small and big rallies. Over 900. All of them. The smallest of their rallies is 100 times bigger than these so-called protesters every single time that they come out.
Yeah. And this is November 4th.
Again, nobody shows this to the world.
Nobody shows this. Nobody.
Right? This is such a hypocrisy of media today.
The funeral service of the
Shah Chiraghi
markers.
In Mashhad.
That was huge.
This was amazing.
They took them to different cities.
Exactly. And I saw those pictures. They had a funeral in Shiraz and also in Mashhad. At the shrine of Imam Reza alayhi salam. Those scenes are just amazing to see. It's literally a flood of people.
Yeah,
even if you pause the video, you can't count the number of people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They show these drone helicopter shots. You still can't, there's no way you can count those people.
Right,
there's so many of them. It's like, you know, Arba'een scene, you know?
Yeah.
Those millions flocking towards Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And this is not just one time.
Right.
You know, Iranians, alhamdulillah, the nation, you know, at large and in whole, they are so in favor of their system, and they do realize and recognize that they have an enemy, namely the United States of America, with its cohorts, with UK, with Israel, with Germany, with France, with, you know, this whole Jabhat-e-Istikbar and Taghut, right? The people, the general people, the women in Iran, they realize it very clearly, and they know it, they acknowledge it. So every time something like this happens, they come out to defend their system, their country.
Right.
Now, that doesn't get shown anywhere, rest assured, right? Again, I'm hoping that Islamic Post can, inshallah, project those videos with the name of the cities, probably, you know, that this is where it's taking place on November 4th, right? Again, these are those protests or rallies that are in support of the Islamic system. Now, what about those rioters that you wanted to talk about,
right?
If you allow me?
Right.
There are four types of people who came out to be the rioters, mm-hmm. right? The first type of those people are the young, the exciting youth. I don't want to say kids.
Right.
You know, they're looking for something exciting. You know, at that age, everybody's looking
really,
for. They're emotional.
They got nothing to do. It's like,
right. You know. They're looking for something, you know, hayajani, as they call it. Something, you know, out of the box. Something, you know.
Thrill.
Yeah, something
Let's
that gives them
something.
A kick, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
most youth.
So you know, some of those, you know, youths, they came out. Most youth are like that, to your point.
Yeah, they're just looking
some
for
of
a
those,
thrill.
Right. Some of those youth, they came out, you know, because it's exciting to be there, you know, they were hoping would be a lot of people, you know, would be chanting slogans, you know, and I don't know, mixed gathering, you know, they're going to be, you know, women, they're going to be men. So, you know, they came out.
Mm-hmm.
This is one category.
Mm-hmm.
They initially came out, but when they saw that these protests are turning violent,
mm-hmm.
right? in the very beginning, because if you, again, the sequence of things is important. Right. If you notice, as soon as Mahsa Amini's death was declared, the people were out in streets, you know, in right. those pockets. Few dozen here, few dozen here, few dozen
right.
there.
Right.
How do you manage to bring people out on streets so quick? You yeah. know, these are the questions we should be, when we're analyzing, we should be asking.
Yeah.
How is it that, you know, they communicated so quick and they came out and decided on? So these are the things. These youth, you know, they're passing by, for instance, on a bike. You know, you'd park your bike and you'd join in something fun, right? So that's one type of people who were part of these protesters right. or rioters.
Mm-hmm.
The second group is the uninformed elites and officials of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So some people, for those who are living outside, I don't know how much they know, but some people in the governmental apparatus, you can say, or, you know, the governmental jobs and stuff, you know, some of them, which is very handful, by the way, you know,
sure.
maybe a couple of them, three, four, five of them, you know,
sure.
it's just very small number. They came out all of a sudden and they gave statements in support of Mahsa Amini,
mm-hmm.
right? And slash women rights, and it's like, you know, convoluted, it's a bit
sure,
of
sure.
a mixture, right? So what happens, let me go in a little bit of a hashia here. What happens is, every time that the mainstream media or social media, they start a trend of attacking Iran on something, there are some weak people within the system
mm-hmm.
who come out in an apologetic manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they become influenced and overwhelmed by this media onslaught.
Right, right. If you notice, you know, sometimes some general Muslim people are like that too. If you say something about, you know, something happened somewhere in the name of jihad, let's say, right?
Yeah,
something
sure.
bad happened in the name of jihad. Somebody misused the name of jihad.
Sure.
So they would come out all apologetic. They're like, no, 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 jihad is just, you know, struggle of the nafs. You know, it has nothing to do with, you know, that apologetic. Something happens with, like, let's say hijab.
Mm.
They would come out,
sure.
you know, hijab, no, it's really in your heart, you know, it's not something, you know, Islam is not forcing us. Or so these apologetic people exist in every setup.
Right.
Right? So these elites and officials within the Iranian governmental apparatus or the system, you want to call it, the Islamic system, they exist too. And some of them, they came out and gave some statements, you know, saying that, oh, yeah, yeah, we are with Mahsa Amini, for instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the very beginning and initial phases of this whole thing.
Because I was following the thing, and so,
right.
and it's true, we found that certain officials and certain ex-officials
mm-hmm.
would come on and
right.
they would give an interview,
yeah.
And they would try to support. And it was interesting, I always found that the other side who was arguing in these debates would always say that, first off, there's no evidence.
Right.
Why
right.
do you keep on pushing the claim that the Western media keeps on feeding you?
Right.
You know, we said in the last talk show how inadvertently, subconsciously, involuntarily, we become the mouthpieces of the narrative of the enemy.
Yeah, some people are just not deep enough
well,
to realize this.
You added that word, right? You said
mm-hmm.
uninformed,
mm-hmm.
uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't
just
thought
know
enough
yeah.
about it to
yeah.
say that, wait a minute, why don't we wait for the things
right.
to come
right.
out? I mean, and
some of them, they just wanted to be the first one to react to the situation.
Yeah.
You know,
and so even Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he said that our heart is sad
right.
over this bitter event
right.
over the death of this girl, Mahsa
right.
Amini.
Right.
So meaning, yeah, all of us are with Mahsa Amini, but now this other thing that is happening,
of course.
We need to see what's going on.
Of course.
So this is the second category. Is
this is the second category.
Elites or the government or ex-governmental
right.
officials.
The third category is interesting, right? And those are the sports, some of the sportsmen and
mm.
sportswomen maybe, and showbiz celebrities.
Mm. So sports and showbiz celebrities.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And very few of them, by the way.
Who are a part of these rioters.
Right. So what did they do? Of course, you know, the showbiz personalities and people, they pull in crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
trendsetters.
Yeah, they're trendsetters. Now, I don't want to, you know, put a blame on anyone, but they probably were, you know, given some money. Right, that just to go out, or they generally like people, right?
They want to be famous.
They want to be famous, right? This is what I'm gonna get to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were, you know, really quick on their feet to say something in support of Mahsa Amini. Again, some of them, if not all, not realizing that, you know, there is a bigger plot behind the scenes.
Sure.
They just thought it's a very quick and dirty way of getting some, you know, airtime, screen time,
sure,
you know, viewership and so on and so forth. So they came out, some of them, how about they came out and spoke on the issue and became famous, right?
Right.
All they were concerned about, I would say 99% of those who did this, they were concerned about the likes, the views.
Sure.
That's all they were looking for.
Yeah.
They didn't know they were playing in the hands of the enemy or they are going to be used by the enemy. They didn't know that. This is the third category of the writers who actually incited, in some cases, by the way, some of them incited the writers to go out on the streets, right?
Sure.
Now,
but are you going to go to the fourth?
Yes.
Oh, well, before you go to the fourth, mm-hmm, I did want to talk about that 1% who willingly came into this field.
Yes.
Because we do have certain, I don't know about sports stars, but I know showbiz celebrities who when you trace their thinking pattern, their ideological pattern, you clearly see that these people, right from the beginning, are enemies of the Islamic system.
Correct.
And so what to me is really interesting and almost, it confuses me in a sense, that how is it that an individual, me as a listener, you know, or I'll switch the places. So if you're the listener, why would you come listen to somebody who is against the Islamic system and is saying something that is against
right,
the Islamic
right,
system?
Right.
I mean,
right,
you do not expect somebody who is against the Islamic system to say something positive
about
the
Islamic yeah,
system.
Yeah.
You know?
See, that's one thing about celebrities,
sure,
right?
Sure.
They generally are going in that direction, you know. They're more inclined towards it because of the pomp and show and the glamour that gets shown in the Western media and what gets shown in the movies and, you know, so on and so forth, and the concerts and music and, you know,
yes,
bilakhare, at the end of the day, we have to acknowledge that Islam does bring some restrictions.
Yes.
And we have no problems with it. We are actually proud that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us those restrictions for our betterment.
Yes.
For our benefit, right? But these showbiz people, they're inclined towards that, you know, no limitations, no limits, you know, I just want to do whatever I feel like, you know, you should be able to do whatever you feel like, you know. It's very superficial, very non-intellectual way of...
I'll be honest with you, some of the actresses, and I don't want to take names because I don't even consider
right,
them to have value to take their names,
mm-hmm,
but they are so un-Islamic in their... And the things that they have done,
yes,
I mean, from, you know, anyways, let's leave it at that, that
mm-hmm,
they have nothing to do with Islam,
mm-hmm,
let alone the Islamic Republic or Islamic Iran or things like that.
Correct.
So the third category, as you mentioned, is this showbiz and sports stars.
Right. And, you know, they're just people who can be, in this context, can be easily ignored because,
sure,
you know, they're not the subject matter expert. They don't have the depth that we can rely on to, you know, look at their analysis or their, they just no ones,
value,
you know, they
yeah,
don't have the value, right? Yeah. So they were impactful, albatta, for a few of the youth, you know, their
of course,
fan base,
you know,
and stuff, right?
The
they came out and did the riots, right? So that's the third category.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I think we just, from here on, we're just going to move on to this fourth category, which is of interest to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I say that? Because they are the real players.
Yes.
You know, if you look at the government officials and those guys, like we said, they were uninformed. You know, once they were informed, some of them backtracked. Some of them, you know, they
right,
were like,
right,
whoops, I shouldn't have done it. You know, they're embarrassed. You know, some of them, you know, may not have been embarrassed, but, you know, deep down inside, they know what they did was not in the benefit of their country.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, those are, you know, emotionally excited youth. You can just, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
tell them, hey, brother, listen, you know, you just want to party, right? You
yeah,
just
yeah,
go to a swimming pool, you know, just do
yeah,
a
yeah, take
few dives. And exactly,
yeah,
just don't, that's where it ends, right? So these three categories, they don't really matter much.
Mm.
Now, the fourth category is where the real deal is. And that category is the remainders of those who were struck down by the Islamic Republic.
Mm. I want to do a cliffhanger because you already said the title, so now everybody wants to, you know, talk about this. But it's something important and I don't want to forget, right? And that is this idea that these people were called, you know, protesters,
mm-hmm,
or just a peaceful rally mm-hmm. as compared to rioters, mm-hmm. right? And it came to my mind, and I think before we continue, this is something really important to distinguish. A peaceful protester, you know, is pretty much what you see, for example, in Palestine, mm-hmm. right? What you're seeing here is something totally different in the Islamic Republic. So they are, and if you were going to talk about it, I apologize.
No, go for it.
But, you know, vandalizing and breaking people's property, houses, mm-hmm. Breaking and vandalizing people's cars,
ambulances,
police officers, right? These are civil servants, you know. Right. In the United States, you have this whole, what is it, Blue Lives Matter, yeah. right? In defense of the police. Yeah. Okay, so here the police are being attacked.
Some of their throats were slit open and some yes. of them were burnt.
They're burnt alive.
These
right?
are the police officers.
The police
right?
who are here trying to ensure the safety, right? Banks are being broken, yeah. Things are being put on fire. Mm-hmm. The hijab of women who were wearing hijab was forcefully snatched off by these individuals.
Right.
So these are in no way peaceful protesters. These are in no way people who have a
legitimate demands.
These are proper violent rioters, you know, that were causing damage. And if it was in anywhere else in the world, they would have been really dealt with very, very severely.
That's very true. You know, one thing while we are at it, they're violent. There's no doubt about it. They're brutal. There's no doubt about it. They're burning people. Some of these people, if they were burnt alive, right? Zinde zinde. These people, like you said, you know, they're snatching the scarves and burning the state property and so on and so forth, right? The public property, the state property. But one thing I want to emphasize on, and that is that these people, in all of these pockets, wherever they exist throughout the country, they are not more than a few dozen.
Right. And they're connected somewhere.
They're connected, of course. It's a network. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about, right? Right. What is that central command unit for them, right?
Interesting.
How is it all operating, right? How is it so quickly on their feet, you know, and very just-in-time type of a thing? Like, you know, just there. Yeah. But there are very few people.
Interesting. Yeah.
They do not represent by any means, whatever your definition is, they do not represent the Iranian nation. They do not represent the Iranian mainstream public.
Yes,
they may have grievances over inflation. There are problems, there's some level of corruption in the system, you know, some people may be taking bribes, and so those are the legitimate demands of the Iranians. They may have grievances, they may be asking for improvements, but these people,
so specifically the violent and
the regime change, you know, callers, mm-hmm. these people, specifically the violent ones, they do not represent the Iranian nation. Mm-hmm. And in, they are by no means, you know, a representative and by no means the face of Iran, right? While the mainstream media would definitely want to focus on them, mm-hmm. right, to show that this is what Iranians are calling for, this is what they're wanting, you know, these slogans, you know, which five people are chanting. And we will talk about it in the media one, how they show it in a way that, you know, looping the videos and stuff like that. We will
right.
we will talk about it in some other time. But know that these people do not represent Iran or Iranians.
Exactly.
While Iranians, you know, they have their own grievances like any person on the planet Earth.
Yeah,
nobody is happy.
In any country.
Nobody is happy in any country of the world. Even the best, you know, Scandinavian countries, mm-hmm. people have their own reservations,
actually,
you know, when it...
The best Scandinavian countries have the highest suicide rates,
exactly.
if you
want
to know about
exactly.
how happy people are.
So, you know, those grievances, Jai Khodesh, you know, even the mu'mineen, the believers who are living in Iran, they have their grievances, right? Even the international students living here, they have their grievances. We have our own grievances, right?
Yeah.
But again, you have to be able to separate and segregate and draw a line between people of this nation, whether they're living here or they are Iranians, you know, by birth. Them and these rioters and these violent, you know, havoc creators. Mm. So this is very important.
Right.
The fourth category,
yeah.
are the remainders of those who were struck down by the Islamic Republic in the past and today. for want, number one, MKO. Right, this munafiqeen e khalq, as they call themselves, mujahideen e khalq. Right. MKO or MEK, right? Mm-hmm. They go by both the abbreviations, right? These Iranians, these MKO terrorists from back in the day, who were responsible for killing off many of the scholars of Islam, they were responsible for attacking many of the government officials. Mm-hmm. They have been carrying out terrorist activities against the Islamic Republic of Iran from the time of its inception till today,
right?
Even people like the nuclear scientist Fakhruddin, right? All of these
Fakhrizadeh,
thank you. Mm-hmm. All of these, you know, scientists, they were assassinated in Iran. There are other nuclear scientists too.
Shahriari.
They were all, even Shahid Beheshti and, you know, Shahid Mutahri and these people, they were all the victims of MKO, MEK, whatever you want to call them, Mujahideen Khalq, they call themselves, and we call them Munafiqeen Khalq, right? They're the Munafiqs. Their problem is with the Islamic system, right? Their problem is with Islam itself, right? Again, I don't want to go too much in details of what their aqaid is and, you know, how they subscribe to socialism and how they're playing in the hands of imperialism today. You know, that's, again, they're headquartered in Albania, right? Mm-hmm. Maryam Rajavi and those guys, you know, they're
incredibly supported, like, you know,
of course,
even though we bring up Albania, but they're highly supported by the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Rudy Giuliani and John Bolton, mm-hmm. and, you know, they mm-hmm. come together and they say these things like, we're going to be celebrating Christmas in Tehran, you know, that's never going to happen, you know. Very deadly. Just to put it a little bit into the numbers, a minimum of 17,000 individuals have been killed by the MKO, terrorist organization in the Islamic Republic. 17,000. So
it's huge.
It's a lot.
See, one thing I don't understand is, like, you know, how people, their own subscribers, their own followers too, like the ladies in MKO, they don't even have a right to change the color of their rusari, you know, the scarf they wear. They're not allowed to get married or change the color of their rusari. It has to be that same color. It's like their uniform. But they're standing up for the women's rights in the world. They're bad-mouthing Islam. They're putting Islam under question. They're putting, you know, the hijab issue on the front line. Who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you?
Even worse, I watched a documentary once where they actually removed the ovaries from some of these women in order so that they don't have
they
kids.
They don't reproduce,
because
yeah.
Because if they have kids, then, you know, then they're out of the workforce.
They can't, exactly.
It's a really twisted, corrupt. And these are one of those individuals that have come out not only in support and are of those rioters, but in support of Mahsa Amini.
Exactly.
A woman for, you know, of all these things.
See, when
it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, we live in a weird, really weird world. So anyways, we'll talk more about these MKO terrorists. Then there are those separatist movements that, you know, every country has them, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, you know, in Kurdistan, there's, you know, this in Balochistan, Sistan-Balochistan side too. You know, those people, you know, who are running those separatist movements, who are calling for their own independent territory, or they're wanting to, like, you know, getting separated from the Islamic Republic of Iran, you know, those people are heavily funded by the CIA, and their names of the people who are in touch with the heads of those people,
sure.
Right? And they meet. You know, I don't want to go into too many details. It requires a longer discussion because it has a lot of details, right?
Yeah.
So they're heavily funded, right? And then their operatives, because they're in Iran, they can roam around, they can go around.
Yeah.
And somebody was telling me just an hour ago here at IP that John Bolton said that they're supporting the...
I think it was John Kerry.
John Kerry.
But he said that,
They're actually supporting the separatist movements to bring in the ammunition into Iran through... it was Iraq border, I think they said. Something like this.
Yeah.
Anyhow...
That they're supporting Kurdistan.
This separatist movements, you know, there are those elements which are present. So as soon as they saw that this Mahsa Amini thing, you know, triggered, you know, it was like a flag for them to just get their act together, go, you know, join these so-called protests, you know, create this this instability and destabilize, you know, the cities, you know, kill the police officers, burn their cars, you know. Ordinary people don't do these things. Okay. You know that, you know, no matter how, you know, angry you are at something, ordinary youth don't go around and, you know, with a sharp knife slit throats open. Yeah. And that too of officers, that nobody has that guts, you know, let's take it. Yeah. These are trained mercenaries, trained professional mercenaries who are paid to do these jobs. So these are, you know, some of the remainders of those who were struck down by the Islamic Republic. Mm-hmm. First is MKO, the second is the Separatists, the third is the sinister Pahlavi regime. So when the Islamic Revolution came about, it did not just come in like, you know, in thin air, like, you know, nothing was happening, you know, Iran, there was no government, nothing was running, so Imam Khomeini came and he became the... No, there was a system in place, right. A West subservient system in place.
Right.
The Pahlavi regime, the king, he was there, and he was the strongest ally. Iran used to be the strongest ally of the United States of America and the West in general,
right,
in the entire region.
Yeah.
Right? More than Israel.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Right?
More than the Zionist regime. They were subservient, right? So Imam Khomeini came, the Islamic Revolution came. The people, they were sick and tired of West subservient governance over Iran. So they overthrew Shah, right? And then he fled and escaped and he was given refuge by the West. Again, okay, why would you give a refuge to anyone? Anyhow.
Right.
What happened to the entire apparatus that the Shah was running? Not all of them were given refuge in America and UK.
Probably most of them weren't given refuge.
Most of them weren't, right?
They even denied the Shah initially.
Yeah,
Go find another place to die.
Yeah. So what happened then to all of them? Well, they're still in Iran.
And they're unhappy.
And guess what? They're not going to be happy because their fathers and their forefathers were struck by the Islamic Republic.
Yeah,
their rule of, you know, their resources and everything was, you know, were put at stake by the Islamic Republic and the Islamic government being formed and Imam Khomeini coming into power. So those people, they never liked Islam, Islamic Republic, and Imam Khomeini, and Imam Khamenei, and Sepah, and all of, you know, they didn't never like them to be in power.
And to make it worse, they probably have a lot of money.
That's what I'm saying.
Because during the time of the Shah, they're the ones who kept the money amongst themselves.
Right. So all of that, you know, resources are coming at play. And they're like, okay, this is a good chance for us to, again, the Pahlavi regime. Now, the family members of Savak. Mm. Savak was the intelligence agency.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Of Iran before the Islamic Revolution. Right. So in the time of Shah Pahlavi, Savak was detaining people, taking them to prisons, including but not limited to Ayatollah Khamenei. Mm-hmm. Imam Khamenei was taken, he was tortured, you know, physical tortures.
Yeah, sure.
They had these, and those places still exist in Tehran. They have kept them alive as a memory that, you know, these are the places where they would bring us and they would beat us. And I've watched an entire documentary on it, right? So they would do what? They would go and, take these believers, those who were running the movement, Islamic Revolution movement, right? They would take them into their custody, they would torture them, they would torture their family members, so on and so forth, right? Till the system of Shah collapsed, right? Now, the Savak is of course not going to be treated well by the Islamic system.
Well, they're going to be, right?
For all the tortures and all the crimes that you have done, we're going to try you in the court because at the end of the day, you did these crimes against the Iranian public, general public, right? What right did you have to, like, you know, take out somebody's nails? What right did you have to, like, take out their teeth? So you're going to be tried in the court of law. So these people, of course, some of them were hung because they were given capital punishment, right? After the crime, the list of crime, not all of them was given capital punishment. Now their families are still here. Some of them themselves, they've done their jail time and now they're out, you know, with all that grudge against the Islamic Republic and Islamic system.
Right.
So they were struck by the Islamic Republic. They're still there. So as soon as they see something like this taking shape, you know, they're quick at their feet too. So this is the fourth category, really.
You know, when it comes to Savak, I'm sorry, when it comes to Savak, a lot of people don't know that the American CIA, and I wouldn't be surprised if the MI6, but what I had read was that the American CIA had a hand in training and creating the Savak.
Of course.
And Savak, I think, but officially, huh? Like, it's not confidential.
I don't think Iran and America had anything covert going on really back in the day, because there was no one to challenge, right? Yeah. So they were like la-la-la-la, you know, in a park. It's like, you know, everything is out and open, right? There was no resistance, no challenge.
It was severe, huh? A severe torture. Yeah. I think a lot of people don't understand that. So, for example, the CIA supposedly won't, you know, waterboard an American citizen in their own country, supposedly. Mm-hmm. At least officially, this is what is said. But here, the Savak was so out of control that they were doing torture officially, openly, on their own people.
Yes, they wouldn't even send anyone to Abu Ghraib or, you know, to Guantanamo Bay like the United States of America does, right? Yeah, I mean, they were ruthless, you know, to say the least.
Are, again, one of that group of people, or the people of their families that had this grudge and came out to attend the
rally. I think we said that there are four types, right? Again, just to recap real quick, right, and kind of close with a statement from Rahbar.
Sure.
The first group is the emotional and the excited youth. You know, they were just emotional, excited, came out on streets, you know, did some, you know, breaking here, breaking there, you know. And by the way, when they were caught, there's so much to talk about. They're on film, right? Because now there's cleaning going on right now, right?
Sure.
So they were picked up by the authorities, and they're like, why did you do that? They're like, you know, can I talk to my mom?
Yeah.
These kids are literally calling for their, they're scared now, right?
A lot of them, they're like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I was just there, and you know, caught up in the moment.
These interviews are there. These proofs are there, and it's sad, right? I mean, as I see, like, the system is being very lenient with these kids.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, you know, come on, you should have known better.
Imam Khamenei said that, you know.
And it is all based on Imam Khamenei. He said that all these four categories, they're not to be dealt with the same iron fist.
Right.
No. You don't need to.
Right.
And hence, you see that police is not retaliating. Even when the ladies, they're, you know, throwing trash on police, you know, they're throwing water on police, you know, they're actually abusing and using curse words, some of these ladies, against police. They're not retaliating. They're not, because they know that these kids are just, you know, in the moment right now. It's just like, you know.
Spur of the moment, yeah.
So Rahbar, you know, he said that not all of them have to be dealt with an iron fist, no. Everybody has their own place. These sports people, you know, he said it actually in a speech. Imam Khamenei said that their opinion doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it has
because
no value.
Because the sports community and the showbiz community at large, they're in support of the system.
Yes.
So
and
these
a big sports and showbiz community.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, I recommend everyone to read the speech of Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. That I think if you can show the link from Khamenei.ir on the screen, that'll be great. So, you know, the second was this uninformed elites and officials. And, you know, Rahbar said that now they know the reality, right? Reality on the ground. They know the facts. It's time to backtrack from your initial stance. It's okay, you said something. Right, it's time for you to, it's time for you to, you know, backtrack and take your statement or, you know, change what you said and inform people, because now it's going to be more effective if you say things. People will be like, no, he's being genuine, right? So say the things now, you know the facts, right? And the third is like the remainders of those who were, we missed one. The showbiz celebrities
we talked about. We added, we talked about the showbiz.
The fourth one is this, what?
The fourth one was the MKO and the remnants of Savak.
He said these people, these have to be dealt with the iron fist through the Islamic law, the Iranian law, you know, the court of law. You have to take those warrants and everything and go arrest them, you know, put them in jails, interrogate them, get to the head of the snake. How did this all happen, right? Fine, there are, you know, a few dozen here, a few dozen there, a few dozen here, but when you add it all up, it's probably a few hundred, maybe a few thousand even, you know, maybe a couple thousand, I don't know, I'm just guessing, right? It's just very small, but you have to look at the entire picture when you're looking at the entire country, right? So Imam Khamenei said that they have to be, the law has to determine their punishment,
Right.
So Islam and Islamic Republic is going to be severe in terms of punishment against these mufsid fil ard. So, you know, this is...
Well, here I want to add, because so the way that we have explained this, right, is that you have pretty much three groups of people, the first three, which is the youth, the governmental elites, and the showbiz people, who primarily, you know, for the most part, are people who didn't really know what was going on. And if they were they didn't get into the violent aspect of it, right? Well, this is where I'm going. So when you have a mob mentality, not everybody comes out to burn something,
mm-hmm.
which you had alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times they just want to come see what's going on. They want to chant a couple of slogans. They have nothing better to do on a Wednesday, Thursday night, right? But in this mob mentality, and again, because the intelligence services of foreign countries are involved here, and they've done all the psychological studies, they know how these things work. You just need one individual, right? So for example, in a full theater, if one person yells fire, mm-hmm. everybody runs.
Right.
This equation here is kind of reversed. So what they do is they have one guy who's most probably from this fourth category, MKO, mm-hmm. Savak remnants, you know, some kind of foreign intelligence, paid off mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
All that guy has to do is throw one Molotov cocktail, or he needs to burn one tire,
mm-hmm.
and then that spreads in the mob mentality, and everybody doesn't know what happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is really why they're coming so hard on these remnants,
mm-hmm.
because they are kind of, they're not the head of the snake, you know, as you're...
They're there to create fitna.
But they're the guys who are pushing, they're that front line individual who's pushing these things to go towards
violence. So true. And I'm glad you put it like this, you know. I think you did a pretty... good explanation of this. This fourth category is which is the real problem, right? The other three, of course, there's some genuine, some not so genuine. Some have not understood Islam, so you know they feel that they need to be educated more. You know, those types of things are there. But this fourth one, they're very intentional. They're very planned. They're very ready, on their toes. Right. All you need to do is, you know, push that button. Their masters, all they need to do is push that button and they get activated. Right. So there are those sleeper cells, right, who are just waiting for the command. You know, again, if we get a chance, we'll talk more about this, this whole, you know, covert operations and how these people are, they become the nufuzi, and then they're planted in systems, and, you know, they stay there till they're needed, type of a thing. We'll talk about it if we get a chance. But, you know, I want to close, this thing with a statement from Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, because we talked about the who's the real responsible of these riots and this unrest and whatever happened in Iran and whatever got shown on the media and the picture got painted outside. Because we're really doing this talk show for those who are outside of Iran.
Sure.
Those who are living here, they have enough information that they know not to worry about anything. And the outsiders, you know, I got contacted by this brother from Australia, right? he's like, you know, he's supposed to come, and he's like, my parents are concerned that is it going to be safe? I'm like, yes, brother, it's perfectly fine. Life is normal.
Yeah,
internet sometimes is a bit flaky, you know, so I don't know how much of that would be of concern to you and your parents. But other than that, you know, just take your trip, right? Rahbar Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he summarizes that and he talks about the head of the snake. He says, and I quote, "I openly state that these schemes were designed by the US, the usurping fake Zionist regime, and their mercenaries." Then he continues, "They sat down and planned. They devised these schemes. Their employees, mercenaries, wage earners, and some treasonous Iranians abroad helped them." This is a complete statement of the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Hafadahullah, may Allah protect him. You know, he's very clear, and he said, "Man bas sarahat mi goyim," right? I'm saying it with very open and frankly and clearly and explicitly.
And that, with a lot of evidence that they have.
Yes. That America and the Zionist regime, and of course, you know, the Saudi and, you know, this whole cult. Mm-hmm.
these, right? These puppets. Yeah.
So this is, you know, basically the reality of the riots. And alhamdulillah, everything is under control. You know, it was under control, but it's even like I said, you know, they're just making the arrests and and interrogating and investigating what really happened and who was connected to who, type of a thing. Mm-hmm. So life is good.
And this emphasis, again, life is good, and this emphasis on this idea that they were a minority, mm-hmm. a very handful of people.
Insignificant minority, in fact.
Significant minority, as you put it so well, that was blown out of proportion by the mass media of the world. Thank you so much, Jazakallah Khair, Sheikh Ali Qumi, for joining us on the talk show. It was good, it was fruitful. And hopefully, you know, we hope as always that it is beneficial, and it will be beneficial, inshallah, to all of the viewers. Until another episode, fi amanillah and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Wherever you are.